Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And today, guys, it's been about a week since the last time we recorded and we caught up with you guys. Brian, it's good to see you, hear you on the pod. It's been a while. And we just want to recap what happened this week with the play-in tournament. Like, we just want to recap everything that went down. Obviously, a lot of games were played, so I love the format personally. I think that it should be here to stay. It definitely gave us some entertaining, great nights of basketball. Brian, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, man. The play-in games, Dan, were really fun to watch. The crowds were really into it. Obviously, the do or die aspect, like the elimination factor, is something that gives each game just so much more value. For those of you the guys that are against it or say that the eighth seed deserves to clinch no matter what, I mean, if you look at it in this play-in tournament, both eight seeds lost two games to get eliminated, one of which were on their home court, obviously with the Cavaliers and the Clippers, which to me shows that they wouldn't have been legitimate contenders in the playoffs anyway. But obviously Trey's monster, 32-point second half. He's a guy that can just win you a game. Obviously it's a little different when you're looking at a seven game series, but sometimes when it's like a do or die game, having the best player in that game can sometimes be the difference, as we saw last night.
Yeah. So, you know, we're just going to get right into it. We're going to quickly recap the first playing games just because we haven't really touched on, so the 7-8 seed matchup. And then we're going to touch, obviously, on all the other ones. Brian, taking it back to the Cavs versus the Nets, I thought it was super impressive. Ramadan Irving and KD, they balled out. Bruce Brown almost gave you a triple-double. And the two bigs for the Nets really balled out. But I got to look at the flip side. Evan Mobley's going to be scary in a couple of years. Darius Garland is the cornerstone for the Cavs, and in my honest opinion, a healthy Jared Allen, the Nets do not get the seventh seed.
Yeah, I mean, Evan Mobley, he feels like a young Chris Bosh to me. I know that we're putting a very high ceiling on him, but I think he's that special. He's that talented. KD and Kyrie, they did what they do. Had no surprise. I think we both picked them going to beat Cleveland just because of that experience factor and the fact that they had the two best players in this game, and those two did what they needed to do, and they were unstoppable by Cleveland. So, but big props to Cleveland. They obviously had a great season all in all, just kind of disappointing for it to end the way that it did here. Obviously, all the injuries that they had this year, too.
All right, guys. And then we're going to move on to the next 7-8 matchup, T-Wolves versus Clips. If I had told you ahead of this matchup that Karl Anthony Towns would only play 24 minutes and score 11 points with single-digit boards, you would say that the Clippers would have run away with this game. But I told you, man, Ant-Man, D-Lo, they went off. You have to give it to this T-Wolves team. Super scrappy, very gritty. Three guys with tremendous talent. I love it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Towns was a huge disappointment. Obviously, he fouled out and he was in foul trouble pretty much the whole game. He did not make a factor at all. To me, like you said, Ant-Man and D'Lo were the big factors. I wish I'd done some more research on how well D'Lo has played against the Clippers this year. Apparently, he's done pretty well. So that was a big factor as well. But, you know, all in all, Ant-Man is the guy that really stood out to me in that game. To me, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I get young Michael Jordan vibes from Ant-Man. It's the athleticism. It's the fearlessness. His jump shot's looking great, too. He's going to be someone that is very dangerous in the Western Conference in the future.
So it sounds like you've been listening to a little bit of the J.J. Redick podcast because, Pat Bev said the exact same thing. Like, this is a growing sentiment across the NBA about Ant-Man. So it's very interesting to hear that.
Yeah, I was really wrong on Ant-Man coming in this year. So to see this is like, okay, I'm definitely watching and learning now.
I love it, man. He's honestly one of my favorite young players. Just all his charisma, his game, everything about him, I'm here for it, man. Honestly.
Agreed. He's good for the league.
Yeah. Moving on to the next matchup we had the Hornets versus the Hawks. Just an absolute blowout. What shocked me the most was that LaMelo had a really great stat line. You know, but they still lost by 30 points. To me, I want to focus a little bit of the attention on the Hornets team because they did get eliminated. Bro, they need to revamp that defense. That was just pathetic. And they have a really strong young core, in my opinion, offensively with Rozier, LaMelo, Bridges, and PJ Washington. But they have no consistency on the defensive end, and Atlanta just fucking took their money.
Yeah, I was hoping for a more competitive game from Charlotte for sure, but that defense, again, reared its ugly head. I think they have one of the worst defenses in the league this year. Very heavy, focused on offense, that roster, so they definitely need to revamp it to get blown out pretty much in the play-in game. And obviously, LaMelo put up some garbage time numbers. Pretty disappointing end of the season for the Hornets.
I will say one thing just before we transition to the next game. We were right about DeAndre Hunter, man. He took that step this year. Like, looking at that game, and just if you look at his season averages and how he performed, he definitely took that step that we were anticipating. So great to see it.
Yeah, healthy DeAndre Hunter is very good news for the Atlanta Hawks, guys.
All right, guys. And now with the last 9-10 seed, we had the Spurs versus the Pelicans. To me, the game was a lot closer than I thought it would be, which is a testament to Coach Pop and his playoff basketball experience. I think that if DeJounte Murray plays better and has his usual stat line, they ball out. And I love what I saw from Devin Vassell and Johnson, you know, the Olympian, as you would call him. They are definitely coming into their own at the end of the season. They've proven us that they're definitely flipping the script. So I love it. The one question mark I have around the Spurs, and it's still very early, is the Joshua Primo pick. I don't see it yet, but dude was hella young when he came into the league, so let's just give it some time, I guess.
Yeah, I think that loss as a whole kind of falls on the Spurs starters. If I remember correctly, I think CJ McCollum outscored the Spurs starters on his own, like 27 and 25 in the first half. So they were just already in the hole from the beginning. As far as the Spurs, I mean, they are a young team. They're going to continue to develop. I agree. I think it's probably a little early to judge Primo a little too much, but I think he can be an elite shooter in this league. And I mean, obviously, he's going to have the minutes, hopefully, here in San Antonio for the future to continue to develop.
Can we also talk about how Herb Jones looks to be the steal of this draft class?
I told you, man. I told you during fantasy season. I was like, this guy is legit. He is not a flash in the pan.
Yeah, man. Just absolute insanity. Guys, we're going to transition into the last game in the play-in tournament. So we have the Hawks versus the Cavs. To me, it's a matchup of two of the brightest young stars in the East. You know, Brian touched on it earlier. Trae Young went off, especially with Capella not playing the second half. And, you know, Bogdan was a perfect sixth man. What I want to focus on, though, is just, to me, this Cavs team looks really promising for the future, man. You look at their 1-6, everyone looks great, with the exception of their sixth man. I think that you make Colin Sexton your sixth man for the next year. They have a really good core moving forward. Like, I am pleasantly shocked and surprised at how good everyone meshes together.
Yeah, I think that's easier said than done, like in principle, Dan, with Colin Sexton. I think he's someone that has a very high opinion of himself throughout the league. I think he's going to want a lot of money that I don't know if Cleveland's going to want to invest that much into a sixth man. Obviously, he is a stud, and they could have definitely used him in the plan. I think they would have clinched their seed had Colin Sexton been playing, but I do think they have issues as far as his fit with Garland. Now, obviously, he's going to be coming off an injury. How much do you really want to invest into a guy like that? That's going to be the big question mark for Cleveland this summer to me, Dan.
But do you agree, though, that their 1-5 is like, you wouldn't change a damn thing? I mean, Caris LeVert looks amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I don't love LeVert. I think he's a little more inefficient than I would like. I think if you can use LeVert as a sixth man, I think is probably my ideal lineup, and maybe add a couple of other pieces there on the wings. Obviously, Isaac Okoro taking another step would really be huge for them. But obviously, the Markkanen, Mobley, Jared Allen thing that we kind of shit on at the beginning of the season, I mean, they proved us wrong with that, because that trio definitely works. And obviously, Darius Garland took another big step this year. He's going to be their point guard of the future. So, again, a disappointing season, but I do think they have a bright prospect. The big question mark to me is going to be Colin Sexton and what they do with him moving forward.
Yeah, let's find out in the offseason. I think this is when he's due his contract extension, actually. Yeah, so
exactly.
It'll be very interesting. All right, and then the last game that we had, Clips versus Pelicans. I mean, we found out a couple hours ahead of time that Paul George was ruled out due to health and safety, which, man, I was calling it before the play-in tournament. I was like, man, I hope no one gets screwed by these protocols. Someone did. But I was shocked at how well they stayed in this game, like, relatively speaking. We know that the Clips have been shorthanded the majority of the season, but to just lose your guy the day of and still put up the numbers you did, really true testament to them. My biggest takeaway from this team is the fact that I think they got to offload Zubac and Nicholas Batum and just focus on their youth, man. I mean, I would even try to move Morris. I love that Morris can score, but, like, it's just too inconsistent. And, like, those three players, if you give some limits to Hartenstein, give them to Robert Covington, I just think that they have better players on their bench that would have helped this game a little bit more.
Yeah, so obviously in addition to Kawhi not playing, Paul George being ruled out last second, then you also had Luke Kennard, who didn't even play last night, Dan. So obviously they're very short. Got to give props to the Clippers and obviously Ty Lue for showing that type of grit, knowing that, you know, they basically have three rotation players out for this must-win game. So a tough break for them. I do think they're going to come back healthy next season, though. That's going to be the biggest question mark because to me, if they're healthy, they're a champion. Contender in the West. Obviously, you guys know how I feel about Kawhi. I think he is a top five player, bar minimum, but he does need to play the games, and the Clippers aren't going anywhere without him. As far as guys like Zubac, I mean, I think Hartenstein is a good young player to invest in for the future. Would not surprise me if the Clippers potentially go that route to get a little younger, save some money. Same with Marcus Morris and Batum, man. They're going to have some question marks this offseason and kind of some tougher decisions to make, but I do agree with you. If Kawhi and PG are going to miss all these games, you're going to want young, reliable players that can kind of get that experience when they're not playing.
Yeah, it just, to me, like, that was the biggest takeaway. And also, I want to address the fact that David Griffin bent over Portland and just robbed them. I mean, apart from CJ McCollum coming over, Larry Nance Jr., man, yeah. Who could have seen that coming? A mean double-double. It's just a lot of players might not like this guy, but he definitely knows how to finesse and make a roster.
Yeah, Larry Nance Jr. was a key to the game. Like, when they went small, they used Larry Nance Jr. I think they took Valanciunas out, and New Orleans just flew with that lineup. So the trade ended up being totally worth it just off that, I'd say.
Yeah, man. So, again, great takeaways from this play-in tournament. Great matchups all around. But, you know, we now have our set schedule for both the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference playoffs, guys. We're going to pivot into the first round matchups, give you guys our takes on each matchup, who we think is going to have the advantage and is probably going to be coming out of each matchup, and just some key things to watch out for. So we're going to start off with the East. Brian, one through eight matchup, Miami versus Atlanta. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, so to me, obviously a couple Southeast Division rivals here. The most intriguing part of this series is going to be seeing how Coach Eric Spoelstra schemes against Trae Young. Obviously, I respect what the Hawks did in the play-in. We both had them making it as the eighth seed, though, so this matchup to me isn't too surprising. The Cavs did really go at Trae Young on the defensive end in their play-in game, and I think that's what Spoelstra is going to do in this series. I think he knows Trae is a weak defender, and they're going to attack him early and often. Obviously, the Heat are also going to be healthy 100%. No more resting, so this should be a pretty good warm-up for them in the first round to see how legitimate of a contender they're going to be in these playoffs. Obviously, as you guys know, I'm a big believer that Jimmy Butler cannot be the best player on a championship team, but we'll wait before we go too much more into that argument. Ultimately, though, obviously, with home court advantage, they have the better coach, they're a deeper team, plus the doubts that Clint Capela is even going to play. This just feels like the Heat should win in five, but I have great respect for Trae's ability to go out and just steal a game or two, so I'm actually going to go Heat in six, Dan.
I was about to say we're on the same wavelength. I have the Miami Heat with a gentleman sweep. I do give props to Trae just having a monster game and going off, but I think that it's going to be too much to handle. I think that the Heat are ultimately going to run a lot of schemes to switch on to Trae Young and put him against Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Kyle Lowry, and ultimately the Heat are just going to expose the Atlanta Hawks defense. And also, they have enough defense on their own to kind of lock them up. So I have Miami Heat in five, personally.
Yeah, I agree. I think this should be a quick first-round matchup, one of the few.
All right. And then we're going to pivot on to the 2-7 matchup, probably the most anticipated matchup of the first round. We have the Boston Celtics taking on the Brooklyn Nets. I want to give my take second just because you already know where I stand with this. Brian, what are your thoughts on this one?
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to hear it. To me, this is the most premier matchup of the first round. It's kind of rare that you get a championship contender like Brooklyn as a 7 seed, which to me leads off a really great and intense matchup. The Nets are going to be confident coming off their play-in win. Obviously, the hopes that Ben Simmons can make it back in time for like games 4, 5, or 6. Just the possibility that he can come back, play 15 minutes, maybe help them out in the fourth quarter with guarding a guy like Jaylen Brown. That could be the key to the series. It does seem more likely like Ben Simmons is going to come back than Robert Williams for Boston. So to me, that is a big factor as far as where the series is going to swing. To me, though, this is a most fun matchup because of the star power. You have KD and Kyrie on one side, Tatum and Jaylen Brown on the other. To me, this is a legacy series for a lot of these guys. KD and Kyrie to potentially fail making the conference finals would be make them one of the more disappointing superstar duos to ever pair up. Obviously, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they have their own experience. They've been in the conference finals multiple times, and they can't really seem to win that big series. To me, this is a great test for all four of these guys, including my theory that KD is still the best player on the planet. My prediction, I think Ben Simmons comes back and makes just enough of a difference towards the end of the series. I got the Nets in 7 over Boston.
All right, guys, so I'm going to put a big disclaimer out here. I would think it would be idiotic to put Ben Simmons in the series, shut him down for the season. Wow. I think it throws off any rotation that Steve Nash and his coaching staff might have developed. I say might because I have huge doubts about the rotations they already run. But I just don't see – this guy hasn't played basketball in a year, competitive basketball in a year. I know he could probably make an impact on the defensive end, but I worry that he would be so much of a liability on the offensive end, it wouldn't be worth it. I would just – like, you're messing everything up by, like, just putting him into the fray in game 4, in my opinion. I just sit him out for the rest of the year, and I say, this is a wash if we can keep moving forward. If we make it past this round, sure, let's see where he stands, but I just wouldn't do it in the middle of a series, personally. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I do understand that. I think I was going to touch on like him being a liability offensively. There's always the possibility that Udoka, if Ben Simmons does play, could always do the hack of Ben and then have to send him to the line. And that'll make Steve Nash have to really make a decision at that point of how valuable he is.
I don't think it's worth it. If he were starting the series, sure. You know, you have 2 games that you could possibly lose. But again, game 4, we don't know how many games they might be up or down. Like, why would you risk it at that point? You already have continuity within the series. That having been said, though, I wouldn't play Ben. And I just think that the Boston Celtics match up perfectly against the Brooklyn Nets with their offensive schemes. I mean, their wing Brooklyn is weak on the wings in terms of defensively, and they're just going to go at them. They don't have any big man presence to kind of defend these slashers that are Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. They can shoot from the perimeter. I just think that Boston as a whole, including Marcus Smart, all the other role players, are going to outscore Brooklyn, and Brooklyn's not going to be able to stop them. I have Boston winning in 7, personally, and I just really think that the Nets need to address that defensive liability that they have, Matt. I really do. It's gonna be what knocks them off, honestly.
Yeah. So, I mean, we both obviously have this as a 7-game series. I think we both agree it's going to be tight. What I would say, though, is I think KD is going to get a lot of minutes. KD has really impressed me on the defensive end. I think he's still underrated as far as what he can bring to the table defensively. It's not ideal for him to play 40 minutes, 7 games, but, I mean, let's be honest, Dan, we're at the end of the season at this point. You're not worried about an injury. Like, if something happens, the season's going to be over anyway. So, the way I see it is you might as well go all out. I think they're going to have that same logic with Ben Simmons. I do agree with you. It's going to depend on where the series is at by game 4, game 5. I think that's why they're not tying themselves to a specific game, because depending on what the series is at is going to say where he's going to be. If they're down 3-2 and it's game 6, I think Ben Simmons plays, for example. That's just, I don't think they're going to let themselves lose if they think that he can at least contribute and help them win 2 games.
Yeah, I mean, I see the logic. I can't argue with it. I just wouldn't take that gamble. But again, I'm not paying this man millions of dollars, like millions of dollars to just sit on his ass and do absolutely nothing. So I totally understand why Brooklyn would want to, why Brooklyn would want to play that card. I agree with you. I think that KD's very underrated defensively. But again, I mean, the fatigue has to weigh in. KD, I think, said it himself in that game, in the game versus Milwaukee. He was so washed that, like, he got tired, man. Like it, at a certain point in time, fatigue will factor in into the series. And maybe it's in game seven that you and I both predict it's going to go down to. Like, they're not deep enough, and they don't have good enough defense, I think, to hold out Boston.
It's going to be fun, man. I think we all hope it goes to seven games for sure.
All right, guys. And then we're going to transition to the 3-6 matchup, Milwaukee versus Chicago. I see this kind of being a gentleman sweep similar to the Atlanta-Miami series. Chicago's definitely fallen off quite a bit from their early run as the first seed in the Eastern Conference. I think Lonzo Ball is going to be severely missed in the playoffs. I mean, he's a great defender and just overall great facilitator for Chicago. That having been said, I can't negate the power of Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, and Nikola Vucevic on offense. I think they're going to steal a game, but I think Milwaukee's just too well balanced to not take away the series.
Yeah, this series lost a lot of juice with that Lonzo Ball injury. If you had told me 6 months ago this would have been a playoff series, I would have told you this was going to be great, but obviously we're not as excited. Hopefully Chicago still gives us a little bit of a series. DeRozan's had a great year. Zach LaVine, obviously someone we have great respect for. I think they'll win one at home, and I think they'll lose another one on either a nail biter, just because Giannis is going to be too much to show, and I think the Bucks win in five as well.
Awesome. And then I think that you and I both agree this is the biggest toss-up of a matchup. The 4-5 matchup in the East. Sixers versus the Toronto Raptors. Guys, I have an upset alert right now. I am saying that the 76ers get upset by the Raptors. Raptors win in six. Biggest issue I want to call out right now, Matisse Seibel is not vaccinated and cannot play in Toronto. That is going to be huge for at least two, possibly three games in the series. That to me is pivotal, considering he is Philly's best defender. And the fact that he's not getting enough shit about it right now kind of bothers me, given all the shit that Kyrie got. But, you know, neither here nor there. I just think that, you know, James Harden is a shell of who he was in the beginning of the year. I think that he just doesn't recover this series. And Joel Embiid can't do it all by himself with Tyrese Maxey. Tobias Harris has been a huge disappointment. Dog's coaching has just been questionable at best at times. And I think that the Raptors have superior coaching, superior overall team, and that's just going to be too much to overpower the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, so I mean, we agree on some of those points. I agree with you on Toronto. No one is definitely sleeping on them. I think this is probably the biggest upset alert of the entire first round in either conference. However, I still do believe that Philadelphia has the two best players in the series. The issue for them is that Toronto probably has the next four or five, as we touched on. They're obviously a deeper team. They've got good size, good length. Obviously, Nick Nurse and Doc Rivers are both championship-winning coaches, which I think is a pretty cool nugget in a 4-5 matchup in the East. To me, it shows kind of how deep the East has been overall. But to me, though, Dan, the main player to watch in this series is going to be James Harden. As good as Toronto is, if Philly gets good James Harden, they are winning this series in six or seven. If they get the James Harden that struggled against Toronto's length in the regular season, and obviously doesn't get those foul calls that he usually gets, I could definitely 100% see Raptors winning in six or seven. However, I do think we're going to get more good James Harden than bad. I know that there's going to be a lot of pressure, but he is playing with Joel Embiid, who, as you know, Dan, is your MVP candidate for this year. I think that Philly with those two guys is just, I can't see them losing this series. That would be a massive disappointment on their end. And that's no disrespect to Toronto, but after that James Harden trade, a lot of folks had them as a title contender. So, you know, it's time to find it.
All right. So you're saying Raptors or Sixers in what? Six, seven?
Seven. I'm saying Sixers and seven. That's how much respect I have for Toronto. Like, I think this is going down to the wire.
All right. I you know, I go back to this point. The 08 Celtics really are the team that milks that championship.
Oh, yes. That's why I had to throw it in, the championship.
Tell me right now, who would you rather have as your head coach?
Rivers, Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse. No question. No question. Okay. He is a better coach.
And I will say one thing before we quickly pivot to the West. You know, James Harden hasn't proven us anything in the playoffs, and less fouls are called, so – if he can't get his shot going, if he has a shot going, I agree with you, much more interesting. If he doesn't have a shot going at all, the series is going to get ugly really quickly.
I agree. It is going to get scary for Philly really fast, and you're going to see Embiid very frustrated if you see that James Harden for sure.
All right, guys. So I think nonetheless, we have some very interesting matchups in the East, probably some matchups that we wouldn't expect to be as tight as they are. But, you know, here we are. And we're going to move on to the West. So we have the 1-8 matchup, Phoenix versus the Pelicans. Brian, I mean, I think this is a wash. I wanted to say Phoenix sweeps, but then I thought about it. Ingram and CJ, I could see them stealing a game from Phoenix at one point or another, just given how versatile and dynamic and overall explosive that combination is. So I have Phoenix winning in five, but I mean, it's the best team in the league. I mean, for a reason. I think they're going to overpower them.
I agree. I think their depth is going to be too much for the Pelicans. Phoenix won the season series 3-1 as well. The Pelicans, I feel like, actually match up decently with Phoenix as far as size and length goes. They've got some pretty decent defenders to throw at guys like CP3 and D-Book with Alvarado, Herb Jones, and all them. It's going to be something to watch to see if they can make some games a little tighter for Phoenix. And obviously, the Pelicans have been a really good story. Props to them, as we said, for turning around their season. But they're running into a buzzsaw here with Phoenix. I think Phoenix is a team that's on a mission. From last year, I got the Suns in five as well.
All right, so you also predict just the one upset here or another. All right, cool. And then the 2-7 matchup. Guys, I'm going to be very honest. This is a matchup I looked at and I analyzed. I could go either way, honestly, at the end of the day. That's how much I respect what Minnesota has done this year. The faith I have in Anthony Edwards, the respect I give for Chris Finch, their head coach, man, like they're just a good, gritty team. You know, Memphis has been amazing the entire year, but the one biggest concern I have for Memphis is that they don't have as much playoff experience at this point as some of the other players on Minnesota, like a Pat Bev. That is the heart and soul of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I have an upset, Minnesota in seven. Wow. I think that Anthony Edwards solidifies himself as the best candidate from that draft class because of this series.
Oof, that's a bold call, Dan. That's a bold call. That Pat Bev factor, I think, is going to continue to take place in this series. I think he's going to play a really big role. He could definitely get under Ja Morant's skin and make things difficult for him. And if that's the case, I mean, we'll definitely see what ends up happening. Obviously, Memphis was super impressive without Ja this year. So I think that they've proven that they're deep enough to handle, even if he is struggling. It'll be interesting to see if Minnesota can steal a game in Memphis, because then I think that shit talking from Pat Bev is really going to ramp up. My concern for this series that Ja only averaged 20 points a game this season against Minnesota. Yep. Four games in the regular season, that's not going to be good enough. They also split the season series 2-2, which should definitely be concerning for Grizz fans. Ultimately, though, Dan, and this was one that I went back and forth with, as much as I love Kent, Anthony Edwards, and D'Lo as a third wheel, I do expect Ja, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Desmond Bane and the Grizzlies to win in six. And I thought about it a lot. I was close on Grizzlies in seven. I could still definitely see it going seven games, but I think Grizzlies are going to win in six. And I think it was actually kind of wild that both Shaq and Charles Barkley both picked the Timberwolves, which I think it definitely puts Grizzlies on upset watch here.
I think the Ja factor plays a factor and a role, rather. And I just think that the Timberwolves match up very well with the Grizzlies in terms of star power with Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns. I mean, bro, that Steven Adams guarding Cat, it's a great matchup at the end of the day. I'm just going to leave it at that. But regardless, I think that this is probably one of the more close, tight series than we would expect.
Yeah, and I think this is also a great showcase for the future of the league. There's a lot of young stars in this series, and there's going to be very explosive. There's going to be tons of highlights, I think. It's going to end up being one of the more exciting first-round matchups for sure.
All right, Anthony Edwards, I need you to pull your MJ out, you know? Let's prove Brian wrong. He called you MJ, but then he's sleeping on you. I don't get it.
Man, the Grizzlies, as good as they played all season, now's the time to show it. Like, this is when it matters.
All right. The 3-6 matchup, we have the Warriors versus the Nuggets. Jokic is a lot of people's. I think he's a favorite to win MVP, actually. But I just don't think he's strong enough to take down a healthy Golden State Warriors team on his own, personally. I have the Warriors in six. With Steph coming back at some point, I think he might. Is he going to be ready for the first game? I can't remember.
Reports say he is. He is supposed to be ready to go. I think he's going to at least warm up, but it does look likely he's going to play tonight.
Yeah, so like, you know, Steph, let's say he sits one game out, regardless, like the Warriors are just so deep. We have Jordan Poole, arguably the most improved player candidate for this year or winner this year, and they just have a really good bench and superior coaching, in my opinion. I have the Warriors in six.
I actually am even more impressed with Golden State. I know a lot of folks have them as their title favorite. Obviously, they have the experience. The only thing is, guys, we have not seen this big three version of the Warriors play in a playoff series for a very, very long time. To me, it's going to be a fascinating team to watch in the playoffs. Their big question is going to be health. Steph just coming back. Dre missed a lot of time with a back injury. We obviously all know about Klay. It's going to be interesting to see, can they seamlessly just go right into it, right in the middle of the playoffs? And then for Denver, man, they really are missing MPJ and Jamal Murray. I know they really wish they could have them. I expect Jokic, though, Dan, to have a Superman type series. I'm talking 30 points, 13 boards, 8 plus assists. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. But I do have the Warriors in five, despite it all. I think Steph is going to play in all these games, and I think Golden State's going to get off to a very good start in these playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. And then the last matchup, probably another tight matchup in my opinion, is the Dallas Mavericks versus the Utah Jazz. I have Dallas winning it all, or sorry, winning at least this round and taking down the Jazz in seven. I think that the Jazz, Donovan Mitchell, he is a young Dwayne Wade. He shows up in the playoffs. He just gets it. But ultimately, the defensive liability that Rudy Gobert becomes in a playoff scheme, because they switch everything, they try to get him out of the post, and then they expose the fact that Utah has no other defenders around him. Luka's going to be way too much for him to handle. I have the Dallas Mavericks taking them down in seven.
In seven. Okay. So to me, the intrigue behind this one is obviously with Luka and his calf strain. Obviously, you guys know he's not playing today, and his game two situation's kind of up in the air. So him playing or not playing to me is the difference of the Mavericks advancing, in my opinion. Obviously, Utah's had a very interesting season. We all know about what's been going on with Donovan Mitchell and Gobert and all these crazy or all these rumors. But ultimately, this series is going to fall on the health of Luka. We're going to have to just see how he plays. If he doesn't, I could see Utah winning in six, no question. Again, I think they would have the two next best players in the series. Although, Dan, I think you bring up a great point in the playoffs of teams going small, forcing Gobert out of the paint. I mean, that's something that is definitely, you know, Quinn Snyder is going to have to figure out a solution for that. And even though I have respect for them respectively, to me, this is still a series that I think I agree with you. Dallas is going to win in seven. I think Luka is going to come back mid-series and turn things around for them. As long as Dallas can hold one of the two home games, I think they can win one in Utah and then win the rest of the way out.
I think that ultimately, man, Luka's still the best player on one leg. That's how much respect I have for him in the series. I think he comes back for game three, if not game two. And Quinn Snyder hasn't proven to be able to figure out a rotation in the past, what is it, like 2 years? Why would he figure it out now? I don't believe their roster, in my opinion, is weaker than it was last year. So for all those reasons, I just don't see them making it past this, unless Luka just cannot play until like game four.
Exactly. And that's why that calf strain is so, it's such a big part of this series, no doubt. And it's weird because then they have Hassan Whiteside as their backup center in Utah. And it's kind of like, you know, if you had a like a more of a stretch five, a more mobile five, like that could be a better fit to kind of have for the playoffs as opposed to Whiteside, who pretty much does what Gobert does.
I think Whiteside might even be a better defense, a better schemer for the playoffs than Gobert, just because he can actually dribble the ball, put it on the floor, take jump shots. Gobert does none of that, so Whiteside can at least space the floor a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to. Again, I don't hate Gobert, but like, I just see the flaws in him probably more than a lot of people.
Yeah, but it's ultimately, you know, East and West, they're both going to be some really entertaining games. We're really excited to watch some basketball this weekend and next, throughout this week. It's going to be fun, man. I'm really, really excited. I think these playoffs are going to be better than the last couple of years for sure.
Oh yeah. I think, you know, for the most part, most squads are healthy. We've had a very entertaining season of basketball so far. Everything pans out for it being just a great overall time of year.
Agreed.
All right, guys. So that about wraps it up for us. Make sure to follow us on our social media, both Twitter and on Instagram. We're kind of keeping updates on a game by game basis, just as we see fit, and our general thoughts on each game as they're played. And in case you just want to talk, you know, we're there for it. We've been getting a lot of banter from Lakers fans and just fans of certain teams that are already out of the playoffs. So it's been a good time. And make sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you may use so you are up to date with the latest episodes when they drop. We are trying to go back to a more consistent schedule of Tuesdays and Fridays, but you know, we might pivot here and there, so just make sure to follow in case anything like that changes. Brian, any parting words?
Yeah, no, Dan, you nailed it. Keep listening. Definitely keep going back and forth with us. We're excited to talk basketball with you. Obviously, if you guys have questions that you want us to go over on the pod based off what you guys have seen, feel free to send them in to us. We'll definitely we'll bring them up live on the show.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be more playoff-oriented, you know, as this time of the year is focused on that. But if you want to discuss something offbeat, hit us up and we'll definitely find a way to incorporate it.
Facts.
All right, guys. Until next time, have a great one.